Welcome to WMUK.
Thank you so much. It's a pleasure to be here.
You were born and raised in Monterrey, Mexico, in the northeast region of, shall I say, Mexico.
Correct.
Can you paint a picture of that community for us?
Yeah. Monterrey is a large town. It's probably the second or third largest city in Mexico. It used to be a very industrial city. Now it's a very financial city as well. And yeah, I grew up there. Some of my childhood, in fact, I spent in the U.S. When I was a toddler, we spent a year in California. And then we also spent 1 year in East Lansing because my dad came to graduate school at Michigan State. And so I was here when I was a toddler. I don't have many memories of it. The only thing that I vaguely remember is the snow as a really fun thing. I don't remember the call.
What did he study?
He studied marketing.
Tell me about how your family fits into that picture of Monterrey, Mexico, like the social strata there.
Well, I have a very large family. On my mother's side, there were 13 brothers and sisters. On my father's side, there were four of them. And so I have tons of cousins. So growing up in Monterrey, my memories are always of family gatherings. And family gatherings where there was always somebody coming in, somebody leaving, somebody coming in, somebody leaving. And my own direct family, there's six of us. And I'm the oldest. There's five boys and one girl. And again, my house was always packed with activity. My wife tells me when my wife came to visit the first time is that she would not know who my brothers were and who the friends were because there was always people coming in and leaving the house. And so it was hard to keep track of who really belonged in the family and who was just there eating because they ate in the house almost every day.
In the whole scheme of things in that community, is Monterrey, Mexico considered an affluent city?
Yes, Monterrey is a relatively wealthy city within Mexico. And that is the economic engine of the country, or it's been for many times. Obviously, I'm very proud of the city, so I'm going to say this. If you talk to somebody in Mexico City, they're going to tell you otherwise. But no, Monterrey is a wealthy city, and one that has been characterized by the relationship with the U.S., has been one of the leading exporters of goods to the United States. There's a lot of multinational firms from the U.S. and from the rest of the world that established their headquarters in Monterrey.
What did your father and mother do for a living?
My dad has a PhD in marketing. So he was a businessman all his life and worked in the brewery industry, another title, Kalamazoo. Then he went into banking. Then he went into retail. And he was also a professor all his life. When we went back to Mexico after he's getting his PhD at Michigan State, he was a marketing professor, eventually went into industry. But all his life, his love of teaching basically made him always wanted to teach at least one class. And so even though he was working all day, he will finish working at 8 p.m. and go to teach a class at 8:30 p.m. And because he loved to be with students. So I think I inherited that from him.
Here's what's fascinating then about your story is that you grew up seeing poverty. Mm-hmm. Your family obviously did pretty well for themselves, but you had an emotional connection to that. Tell us about that.
Absolutely. And growing up, my family had resources, but I saw poverty all around it. And so growing up, my conviction was that poverty is something that could be eliminated, that if the government were to implement the right policies, a lot of those poor people would have many more opportunities than they had. And so when I decided what I wanted to do for college, I decided I want to become an economist because by implementing the right policies, we're going to be able to reduce poverty in Mexico. So that's what I did. I went to school to become an economist. When I finished my bachelor's degree, I decided I wanted to get a PhD in economics. And so I came to the U.S., I came to Michigan State to get my PhD in economics because I wanted to learn more economics, to go back to Mexico, work in government, to implement good policies to reduce poverty. What happened at Michigan State is at some point I had the opportunity to teach a class in my fourth year. And I remember people asking me, do you want to teach a class? And I said, no, you know, I want to be a politician. I'm not sure I really want to teach. And somebody told me, well, if you teach a class, we'll pay you more. And as an economist, money matters. I said, okay, that's fine, I'll teach. After I stepped in the classroom for the very first day, I couldn't believe that I could spend the rest of my life doing that and that people would actually pay me to be in the classroom.
And when you taught for the first time, were you doing that as a teaching assistant or you were on the faculty?
No, I was a teaching assistant. I was a graduate student at Michigan State. It was the fourth year in the program. I was still finishing the PhD. And as a teaching assistant, I took over a class. And it was absolute joy. I mean, I was in heaven. And I said, really? I can do this for the rest of my life? I decided, you know what? I can influence the world by influencing students. I can influence the world and change the world by opening their eyes of hundreds of students to the way of thinking that economics provides. And I did it, and I've been so fortunate to spend my career doing that.
You went on from there. Did you go to Trinity College?
Trinity University. So basically, when that epiphany came and I decided, okay, I want to be a professor, I applied for jobs and I got a great offer from Trinity University in San Antonio. Trinity is a university very similar to K and relatively small, mostly liberal arts. And so I went there in 1989 and I have the time of my life. I had great students, had great colleagues. I lived in San Antonio, which is a beautiful city in Texas, and never thought I was going to do anything differently. I did it for 21 years. At some point, I was department chair, and the president of the university asked me whether I wanted to do more work in administration. And I wasn't too sure I wanted to do it because I really love doing research. I really love being with students. But I love learning new things. I love meeting new people. So I said, well, why the heck? Let's try it. So there was a fellowship run by the American Council on Education, and I applied for the program. And that is like an internship that you do with a president at a different college and with a vice president at a different college. So I applied, I received it, and I spent a year at Pomona College in California, working with the president, working with their dean.
And it was a way to get behind the scenes and understand the work of getting an administration in an academic field.
Absolutely. And also for me to see why I could be willing to give up the absolute heaven of teaching classes to do something different. And I learned that by becoming an administrator, you can have an influence on things that as a faculty member, you really cannot. So I was intrigued, went back to Trinity, and I was special assistant to the president for a couple of years, doing basically all kinds of fun stuff. And that's when Occidental College from Los Angeles called me and said, would you be interested in applying for our vice president for academic affairs position? And I said, you know, let's talk. So one thing led to another. And a few months later, I was moving to Los Angeles at Occidental. And I had an incredible time in LA at Occidental, spending 6 years there, being the vice president for academic affairs, which is basically running the academic program. You're in charge of the curriculum, you're in charge of the faculty, and it's a great institution with really interesting students, interesting faculty. And my thinking there is, I'm going to be vice president for a number of years, and then I'm going to go back to be a faculty member, because that's my love. And about a year and a half ago, I get a call from Kalamazoo College saying, we're looking for a new president. Never in my wildest dreams, I would have thought that door was going to open for me. And so I talked to my wife, and obviously my wife said, yes. She was born in Kalamazoo, and then her father used to work for Upjohn Pharmaceutical. When she was a child, they moved to Mexico, and they lived in Mexico for 6 years. Then they moved to Puerto Rico, again, working for Upjohn. And she pretty much went through all her schooling in Puerto Rico. When she finished high school, she actually came to college at K, and she graduated from K. So for her, the thought that we could come back to Kalamazoo, and for me being the president, it was just unreal. So we thought, well, let's apply. Let's see where could this lead us? And we knew that the chances were not that high. K has an incredible reputation in higher education. Our former president, Eileen, did a fabulous job. So we knew there were going to be many, many very good candidates. So we went with it with our eyes wide open, thinking, oh, the chances are not high, but wouldn't this be a dream? Well, the dream came true.
When you talk about your past, one of the things you did not mention is that you won awards for your teaching. So you evidently was very, very good at it. The other thing you didn't mention is you're really quite the scholar. In several instances, you graduated with the highest GPA. With your bachelor's, you graduated number one in your class. And I think, was it in your master's program? You had the highest GPA in economics. So this is what you bring to the table. There's something I'd like to talk about that was a very transformative experience for you, and that was when you were in your junior year at Monterey Institute of Technology. You decided to do a study abroad experience here in the United States. And you were at the University of Wisconsin, Eau Claire. What I'm curious about is what motivated you to study in a different country, and how common was it for students at your school to do so?
Great questions. And I'm so glad to talk about it because that was such a transformational experience for me. And so if I go back and think of what motivated me about it, in part, my dad has studied in the U.S., so that was always in the back of my mind, something that my dad had done that perhaps I should do. I knew that eventually perhaps I wanted to come to the U.S. to go to graduate school, so I knew I needed to improve my English, and the only way you can improve your English is by actually living in an English-speaking country. And I was fascinated by college life in the U.S., by what I knew about college life in the U.S. So all those things made me think, you know, I really want to study abroad. In terms of my college, at the time, it was not as prevalent as it is today, but there were a good number of students that would go to study abroad every semester. So I applied to study abroad. They accepted me in the program. They told me, okay, you want to study economics, so you're going to go to Eau Claire. When they told me Eau Claire, I sort of took a step back and said, wait a second. I said, I want to go to the U.S., not to France. No, Eau Claire is in Wisconsin. So I found Eau Claire on the map. And I decided, okay, that's where I'm going. And it was an incredible experience. And it was incredible in many different ways, in ways that sometimes you don't expect. One of them is when you are taken to another place, when you are not a native speaker of the language, where you really do not understand the culture very well, you are in a really vulnerable position. And you rely on the goodwill of others for your basic survival. And that teaches you a level of empathy that, unless you live it, is difficult to have. Once you have that experience, almost for the rest of your life and any moment where you are, you're always looking out there, who among the people that I'm looking at might need help? Because you were there before, so I didn't go to ask for help. They came and told me, you know what, it looks like you're lost. How can I help you? And I was lost many times, believe me. Or I know that you're not really understanding what I'm saying. How can I rephrase it for you? So you learn that empathy, and that is so powerful. You also learn the importance of interacting with people that they're very different from you. Sometimes when you grow up, you might have just about everybody around you thinks the same way that you think, and they were brought up in the same way that you were brought up, with the same religion that you were brought up. When all of a sudden you're put in a different environment, you learn that there's a lot to be gained by interacting with people that are very different from you, that your efforts as a team are going to be much stronger if you're able to bring those different perspectives to whatever decision you're trying to make. So all that is things that I learned in that study abroad experience. I also learned that people in the Midwest are absolutely remarkable. And they are friendly, they're open, they want to be there with you. So I fell in love with the Midwest. I also learned that something that falls from the sky that is white and is really, really cold and it can get you into trouble sometimes, but it's beautiful as well.
When you came to the U.S. for that study abroad experience, were you there just for a semester or for the whole year?
I was there for the whole year. In fact, I went there first for the summer to do intensive English, and then I stayed for the whole year.
What was your level of English at that time? Because that was very bold.
It was. I mean, I knew enough. I mean, I lived in Monterrey. Monterrey is 2 hours from the Texas border. So we used to go to Texas all the time. Although my dad spoke English perfectly, so obviously we rely on my dad translating anything we needed to translate. But I took classes all my life. All my life I've been taking them. But for anybody that studies languages, you know that you really do not know the language until you are forced to be in the middle of the language 24 hours a day.
And have an immersion experience is what they call it. Sure.
So I could read it. I could write it very sloppily. But really, in terms of listening to you and understanding what you tell me, I mean, when you first get there, you think people are speaking 1,000 miles an hour. And you think that they're not separating the words. It just sounds like... And so, okay, why did you just say the words? The house is green. And that's what you expect when you're in a class in Mexico. So it takes a while. It takes a while, but eventually you get it.
When they made the announcement at Kalamazoo College, the public announcement at which you attended, that you are the 18th president of Kalamazoo College, you talked about four factors that you like to look at in terms of what is it that students need to know in terms of preparing themselves for the world they're going to go in. And one of those factors had to do with diversity. And we can talk about some of the others, but since you're mentioning that and you're talking about the importance of having skill sets to interact with people different than yourself. You personally experienced it firsthand. Can you talk a little bit about why that's important for the world of higher education to make that a priority?
There are many different reasons. And that one of them, our students are going to graduate into a world that is more diverse than ever was in the past. Their parents, their grandparents, live in worlds in which they could spend months at a time without interacting with somebody with a different background. That is not the world that our students live in. And so if we're here to prepare students to be able to be effective, to be leaders in society, they need to be able to understand people from different backgrounds. So that is at that level. Another level, you also can talk about the social justice component or diversity. We are a society that we strongly believe that everyone should have equal opportunity to succeed. If we believe in that, and we believe in it profoundly, we need to make sure that every kid in society has access to the educational opportunities that we have here. So colleges need to be ready to welcome students from all backgrounds, and not only welcome them, allowing them to come in, and by that I mean access, is just the beginning. You need to be there to, once they get to your college, provide them the same kind of experience that every other student receives in that college or that university. You need to make sure that if you have opportunities for study abroad, that you have opportunities for research with faculty members, if you have opportunities for internships, that those opportunities are being offered to every kid that comes to your school. Not just to those that had the social capital that when they arrive to your college, they know they should be asking for this. There are many that might be the first in their families to come to college. And if you're the first in the family that comes to college, you're showing up to the doors of your college feels like a tremendous success. And that is success. However, that kid has the same right and the same ability to have an internship, to do research with a faculty member, to go to study abroad. So all these are the things that colleges need to be working on to be able to fulfill our missions.
One of the things that happens when you increase diversity on campuses is, especially if you have students, like you say, who are first generation or from a different economic background of many of the students that they go to school with, I'm noticing just across the country, it's also happened at Kay, it's also happened at Occidental College. Students across the country, they're starting to protest now. They're starting to really articulate and form a movement about feeling welcome on campus and making that a priority. And in fact, senior administrators are actually losing their jobs over these types of things. What are some of your thoughts, not just about Kay, but just in general on this topic?
I mean, this is a great moment in higher education. It is a great moment because students are saying, just getting us into the college is not enough. And they're absolutely correct. And the fact that they're saying it and they're saying it loudly, I'm very happy about it. Because as I said before, access is just the beginning. We need to make sure that when students are in the college and they're in the university, they feel that they belong there. Nobody is a guest at the college. They belong in the college just as much as anybody else. So we need to be proactive at providing those opportunities to make sure that we're opening the doors to all the opportunities that exist within the college to every student that we accept at the college. So if in many colleges this is not taking place, we need to raise our voices and we need to say it is time to change. And many times administrators don't see this. Many times they will say, well, look at the numbers. Our percentage of students of color or underrepresented students or first-generation students is this high. Well, that is not enough. And then they will say, well, look at the graduation rate. And we having a graduation rate that is almost the same for every group. That is not enough. All those things are important. We need to focus on the experience in the college campus, an experience that is going to be equal for everybody at that college campus. It doesn't mean it's going to be easy. It doesn't mean that conversations are always going to be easy. They're not. But that's what a college education is about.
There's a program at Kalamazoo College that tries to provide kind of a supportive environment for students of color. It has a certain cohort, and I don't know if you're familiar with it. Have you heard of the Posse program?
Of course I have. Yes, it's a great program.
not that I'm expecting you to know all the details of it, but it'd be a good time for maybe the community just to know that such a program does exist. And so, in fact, that Kea is doing some things there. I don't know how many years it is that it's been around. No, maybe you know
better. It's more than 10.
More than 10, right?
I believe so, yeah.
And it certainly draws and tries to bring students from the inner cities here. I want to say maybe some from Chicago, but certainly from the West Coast.
From Los Angeles.
Yes, very much so. You speak on it and what it does.
This is a great program. It's a program that started at a national level. And the thinking there was many institutions were trying to diversify the student bodies. And sometimes you will bring a kid from South Texas or from LA, and you will bring him to Wisconsin or you will bring him to Vermont, and they'll be the only one there. Well, when you're the only one there and everything is so completely foreign to you, sometimes it was very, very difficult. So the idea is you're going to be much more successful, and the experience of those students is going to be much better if you don't bring them by themselves. Let's bring a posse. Let's bring a group of them together, and let's provide them services to make sure that they can not only succeed, but they can be leaders on campus. And that's what's behind the POSSE program. And you bring 10 kids at a time from the same general area, and you support them through the 4 years. Their graduation rates are great. Their success rates are great. And they transform the universities and the colleges. At Oxy, we didn't have that program because we brought students from many different places. But at Kea, we have it, and it works great. And in fact, the students from the POSSE program are from L.A., so from the moment the announcement was made and I met a few of them, I told them, you are my posse because you are the ones that are going to help me survive the winter in Kalamazoo. You are the ones that are going to help me understand the culture of Kalamazoo because they have been here for a couple of years. And the same things that I find foreign, they find foreign when they arrived to Kalamazoo 1 year ago, 2 years ago, 3 years ago. I am delighted with the program and delighted with the results of the program. And it is so wonderful to see the students there and to see the students taking leadership roles to change the school.
And they do meet quite regularly, kind of as a small community, and they're very supportive with one another, and administrators meet with them, just so that people are understanding just really the level and depth of this, of this program. Tell us why you were interested in accepting Kay's offer to be president.
That is a great question, and thank you for asking it. And to me, the match between my values and the mission of the school could not be stronger. And let me tell you why. And that Kalamazoo is absolutely committed to the liberal arts. And it has been committed for 190 years, or close to 190 years. I strongly believe that in today's world, students need a liberal arts education. Why? The only thing that we know certain about the world that our students are going to graduate into is that it's full of change. We know that because of globalization, we know that because of technological change, there is a over 90% probability that whatever the first job is, whatever industry they start working, is not going to be the one they're going to retire from. So what does that mean? That I should not be training my student for the first job in their career. I should be educating them to be ready to change with the world and to be ready to change the world. So to be able to do that, what do they need? They need to learn how to think analytically, to think critically, to look at the world from the prism of different disciplines, to be able to understand people with different cultures, to understand the world. That is a liberal arts education. So going back to your question, the first reason why I'm so excited being at Kea is because it's committed to liberal arts. But Kea does liberal arts differently than most other schools. Kea believes that just learning about liberal arts is not enough. You need to experience the real world at the same time that you're studying. Kea believes in experiential education. And by that we mean Kea believes that you should not only study about other countries, you should go and live in another country, that study abroad. You should not only learn about what's going on in the business world or in the community, you should go there and have an internship in that business. And you should not only study what other people are doing research on, you should engage in research yourself. That's the experiential education that we provide at Kea. We want you to be involved. Also, we don't want you to simply learn in school about social justice. We want you to cross the street and engage in social issues, social justice issues in society today. That's what we do at Kea that in my mind is so special. Throughout my career, when I work at Trinity, when I work at Occidental, I have been doing a lot of these things. A lot of these experiences changed my life. When I talked about teaching a class, that was like an internship. That internship changed my life. When I did the American Council Education Fellowship Program at Pomona, that was an internship. I did it in my mid-40s. That changed my life. When I studied abroad, that changed my life. So I believe in the power of these experiences. So coming to a school that those experiences are the core of its own values, the core of its mission, is a privilege. So that's why I just cannot believe my luck that actually I'm in Kalamazoo College and I'm the president of the school.
Back to that public coming out, so to speak, that was at Kay recently. I believe you said something like when Kalamazoo is strong or something like that, that Kay is strong, and that you kind of wanted to increase kind of community engagement. Talk about that a little bit.
Absolutely. We're very fortunate at Kay to be located in the middle of a remarkable city, an urban setting. And what is going on in society today goes right across the street from Kay. So our students not only are going to learn in school about what is happening with the educational system in the U.S., they can learn about it in class and then cross the street and engage with students that are facing that in the real world every day. They're not only going to learn about what's going on with poverty in the country, they can cross the street and help some of those communities to try to overcome the barriers that poverty produces for them. There are so many experiences that they can have in Kalamazoo that in other colleges they don't have that opportunity. Because many colleges like Kalamazoo are located in the middle of rural areas where you really don't have those opportunities. The only time you can do an internship is when you are away for the summer. At Kay, you can do your internship between classes because downtown is a few minutes from the college. And I'm talking about the city of Kalamazoo. You were asking me earlier, why was I interested in coming to Kalamazoo College? And I spoke passionately about why I love Kay as a school. Well, another reason why I wanted to move here is because of the city of Kalamazoo. It is a remarkable place. I knew about it before, and one of the things that I knew about it was the Kalamazoo Promise, which really almost brings tears to my eyes when I talk about it. Because here you have a community where people have said, we want to have a different future than where we are today. We want to provide opportunities for every kid in our community. And they got together and said, the way to do it is by providing educational opportunities to them, to making sure that every kid from this city, if they want to college, money is not going to be a barrier. And not only did they come up with this conclusion, which is a great conclusion, they didn't go to the government and said, okay, now you need to provide those opportunities to them. They went into their pocketbooks and they said, we're going to make it happen. That doesn't happen in other cities.
Is it the second year of implementation of that? Talking about specifically at Kay.
Second year. I'm very proud that the city thought about this and they provided the resource for the students here to go to college wherever they wanted to. And it's really remarkable that 2 years ago, they made the decision to open those doors also for private colleges. Because we know that there is the right school for every kid. And perhaps a large public university is not where a particular kid is going to thrive. Perhaps they're going to thrive in a small setting like Kay. So the fact that now we can use the resources of the Kalamazoo Promise to bring Kalamazoo City kids to Kalamazoo College is brilliant. And I'm delighted to be welcoming them in our campus. And for anybody that's listening to this, that is a student right now in any of the school in the city of Kalamazoo, I want to tell you, study really, really hard. Because if you become a very, very good student in the city of Kalamazoo, I want you to come to Kay. And the Kay Promise is going to allow you to come to Kay.
The next question I'd like to ask you about, as a new president at a college, everyone's probably wondering, what is your style of governance? What is your leadership style? What philosophical approach do you bring to being an academic administrator? What would you say?
Okay. Let me answer with an example. And when I talked to the search committee, they asked me, what is your vision for the school? And when they asked me that, I said, you know what, I'm going to give an answer that might not be the one that you're expecting. If I were to come right now and tell you this is exactly what Kay should do, in my mind, that's an incredibly arrogant position to come in. I haven't been at the college. Many of the people that were interviewing me, they've been affiliated with this school for 40 years, for 30 years, for 20 years. To have an outsider that just stepped their foot and that had read some pamphlets on the school, tell you this is where you need to go in the future. It is so completely arrogant and so completely wrong. What I told them is, what I plan to do if you were to hire me is to come to the school and go on a listening tour of several months. And during that listening tour, I want to listen to students. I want to listen to faculty. I want to listen to alumni. I want to listen to board members, to community members. And after I listen to all of those, we're going to develop our vision for K. And that's exactly what I'm doing. So going back to your question, what is my style? My style is one that I like to listen to people, to understand what they like to try, to understand what drives them, and then using all that to move the institution forward. And we have a lot of very smart people in many different positions at the college. I'm not here to second guess their decisions. I'm here to hire the best people we can for every position that we have at the college and allow them to do their work. And by listening to everyone, create a common vision of where we're going to go moving forward.
In the Chronicle of Higher Education, you had identified at least some priority areas for you, being fundraising, diversifying the student body, and bridging the gap between the cost of tuition and what families can afford. And as far as fundraising, the president that has just left talked about that can be a challenge. However, it looks like the last campaign goal was $125 million, and she exceeded that. What did you get? $129 million, I believe?
Yeah.
Wow. So as you understand it, what are some of the challenges facing K moving forward?
These are great questions.
That's at your feet now.
Yeah, absolutely. And I can take absolutely no credit at all by the incredible success of our capital campaign. The capital campaign that just finished raised over $129 million. That's easy to say, but it's incredibly difficult to achieve. So my respects to Eileen, which was the former president of Kalamazoo College, and all the staff that make this happen. And so going forward, what is the biggest challenge? The biggest challenge we face is that the kind of education that we provide, where we have personal attention for every single student, where we provide experiential education opportunities for every single student, that kind of education is very expensive. And very few families in the state, in the country, or the world can afford to pay that kind of education. So if you want to continue to keep our doors open to students from all backgrounds, we must be relentless in going out there and raising money for the college. And so the challenge is going out there and getting as many resources as we can, telling the story of K, which is a very special story, to people that believe in this story and are able to help us to make this story possible for many, many students.
Are you referencing more scholarships? Is that what you mean when you say kind of creating more access?
Absolutely. More scholarships for paying your tuition, more scholarships to be able to study abroad, more scholarships for if you want to have an internship and it's in a place that cannot pay you for the internship, for you to be able to get some compensation for it, more resources for faculty to do research and for faculty to do research with students. There are many, many different needs. So for people that are there listening, and if you have resources, believe me, I'm going to go to talk with you. Because if you believe in what we do at K, I want to make sure that these opportunities that we have at K that are very special are open to every kid that is in high school right now, that is in middle school, that is elementary school, because they deserve to have this kind of opportunity.
What can you tell me about some new things this school year? I understood that one of them is the opening of a wellness center.
Yes, something that we're very proud of. The Fitness and Wellness Center is about to open September 28th. The community is invited to come to look at the Fitness and Wellness Center. We're going to have a formal opening at 4 p.m. And it's a remarkable place that is going to be available to our staff and our students and our faculty to be able to improve their bodies. And at K, we believe that the education of the student, the opportunities for our employees have to be for the whole person. It's not only you're going to take economics and mathematics. We want you to be a whole-rounded person. And part of that means being in good shape. And so the Fitness and Wellness Center is about to open. And the important thing about it was completely funded by gifts from friends of the college, alumni, trustees, etc. It is a proof that people believe in what K does. And I really invite you to come to see it. It's a remarkable, remarkable building. And the most important thing is what's going to happen in the building. What's going to happen is our students are going to exercise, our staff is going to exercise, and that's going to make their lives better.
Is there anything else? I'm releasing the floor to you.
Well, thank you for doing that. And the main message that I'm trying to convey to everyone is I'm here and I'm listening. I want to know what is special about K. I want to know why you believe in what K does. And I also want to know what has K done that has not worked very well that we might need to change. This is my goal for this year, is to listen, to make sure that we can take K to an even better place. K is a remarkable institution that has done great work for close to 190 years. My wife is an example of that great work. And that's why I know it very personally. We're going to be even stronger in the future. And I'm really very, very fortunate to have an opportunity to be here. I love K, and I love the city of Kalamazoo. The pride that the citizens of Kalamazoo have in their city is like something I've never seen. In other cities, and I have lived in beautiful cities, people like living in those cities. Here, it's not only they like living in Kalamazoo, they're so proud of their city. And every time I meet them, they want to tell me why their city is so incredible. And I can see it. So we feel very, very lucky to be here.
Thank you, Dr. Gonzalez, for joining us at WMUK.
It is a pleasure to be here, and I'll be delighted to come back anytime you want to talk with me.